God,
I am surrendered to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay. We're on page 60. I was asked one time that if I was passing someone in an airport and they were getting off the plane and I was getting on a plane and I had like 10 seconds to say to someone who was new in the program the most beneficial thing that I've been given, what would I say? And I had to think about it for a minute and I thought, well, I would hand him a book and I would say, answer every question and follow every direction. So now we're at a point where that shifts. Because all we've really done, this could take, you could spend 3 months with somebody, 3 weeks, 3 hours. Because all we've really done is made some considerations. All we've really done is ask ourselves some questions over a lot of material. You know, from the doctor's opinion to page 60 is really about 70 pages. 70 pages just to be convinced of the ABCs. And if you're new and you're just beginning this process, I would ask that you consider your ideas about the first three steps or even your experience from reading them off the wall or listening to people. What your experience is with 1, 2, and 3 before you start this process, and your experience with 1, 2, and 3 now that you've done it, then now that you've made all the considerations up to page 60. And for me it was like, and here's what I had to compare it to, because while I was in treatment in 1982, we had to get a sponsor before we got out. And I heard the man that was going to become my sponsor in my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard Don. And it scared me, because I thought for some reason he had changed himself. I knew he was like me. I knew he was like me as a kid. I knew he did a lot of drugs. I knew he went to the penitentiary. But I also saw that he wasn't like me anymore. He had been changed. And I interpreted that as that he had changed himself. And I was just fed up with trying to change myself. So it took me 6 months to ask him. And in the meantime, during those 6 months, I picked a guy the next week in my second meeting in the treatment center. I picked a guy that was totally, totally opposite from Don. If somebody would, and I didn't even know it, I was so asleep. If somebody would have said to me, pick somebody as opposite as you can imagine from the man you heard in your first meeting, that's who I asked to be my sponsor. And he was a great guy. We had a lot of fun. He got me involved in the fellowship and Harry, and the way we did the first three steps was in about 2 hours. And he sat there with me and he said, are you powerless over alcohol? And I said, yes. But what I was referring to was I was powerless over alcohol because of all the trouble it got me in and where it took me. And then I find out it doesn't have anything to do with where it took you or how much trouble you got in. And then he said, do you believe, is your life unmanageable? And I thought he meant out here. And I said, yeah, that's what alcohol did. And then he said, do you believe in God? And I said, yeah. He didn't ask me what kind of God I believed in, that I thought that God was going to strike me down and get me, and strike me drunk as soon as I was a bad AA member. And then he said, now let's go to this book. And we read the third step prayer. And I had no basis of any foundation up to the prayer. So we did the prayer and nothing happened. And he gave me a sheet on how to write inventory. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, depending on how I looked at it, it had a 4-column inventory. And I went home and I can do the first three columns. I've been doing the first three columns my whole life. Every therapist I ever went to, every group I was ever in, all they ever ask you is, who are you mad at? And why are you mad? And how does it affect you? And I can do that all day long. But unfortunately, or fortunately, it had a fourth column where I was supposed to look at my part in each resentment. There was absolutely no way I could do it. Physically, mentally, emotionally. I couldn't do it. And I started to lie. And I would see Harry and he said, are you writing? Oh, yeah. Or yeah, let's see, how's the inventory going? Oh, great, great. And I stopped at a part I didn't have the power to do. And then I hit this place at 6 months. And the only thing I can say about that is that I knew it was inside of me. It wasn't out here. Everything was better out here. I saw the unmanageability was an internal condition. And all of a sudden, it was just in my face. All this stuff I'd been pouring booze on for 18 years. And I called Don, and he said, he still has this chuckle. It drives me crazy. And he chuckled, and he said, I wondered how long it was going to take. Come on over. And you know, all we did was start on the title page, and we went through everything we've gone through up to this page. And that's all I can attribute it to, because I really didn't do anything else. And I got to the fourth column, and it just came. Just started coming. So what I know is this. If you're thorough with everything up to page 60, you'll be given the power to do what's on page 61. If you do everything to page 64, you'll be able to do everything on page 65. That it's that powerful of a process. You see, I believe there's a miracle at each step for each of us, whatever that might be. But I believe the miracle of each step is when you're in the action of the next. Now, what do I mean by that? Do you want to know when you're done with step three, if you're still questioning? I'll tell you how you'll know when you're done with step three, when you got a piece of paper and a pen and you're making a list. You want to know when you're done with step seven? When you're making a list in the eighth step. You want to know when you're willing to make amends? It's one of my favorite jokes, but you'll know when you're willing to make amends when you start to hear some really strange noises. Noises that you haven't heard before. Like, that's one of the strange noises you'll hear. Yourself knocking on other people's doors. You'll hear strange noises coming out of your mouth like, I'm here to talk to you about the harm I caused you. Or statements you've never made in your life like, what can I do to make this right? That's when you know when you're done with step eight. You know, the willingness to make amends is an unmistakable sound. You can't miss it. And you'll hear those sounds. Sometimes it's a busy signal. Sometimes it's a phone. Sometimes it's knocking on someone's door you never thought you'd be able to see again or wanted to. You know, it's a little easier then, you know. But if we've been thorough up to this point, and they ask me after the ABCs, am I convinced, if you turn the statement in, being convinced, so I turn that into a question, am I? Being convinced of what? That I'm alcoholic and I can't manage my own life. Being convinced that no human power can relieve my alcoholism. And being convinced that I'm willing to believe that God not only can, but that He will relieve my alcoholism if I seek Him. So how am I going to seek Him? That would be the next question. But before you can begin to seek God, you have to make a decision about God. But before you make a decision about God, there's a requirement. So we're going to look at the third step in four parts. Part one is, am I convinced of the ABCs? Part two is the first requirement of the third step. The first requirement of the third step is that I be convinced that my life run on self-will doesn't work. And if you're not, you'll find they give you a page and a half. They give you a lot of information and a lot of questions all the way to the bottom of 62, but not the last paragraph. And this is where it goes into the actor who's almost always in collision with something or someone. This is where they talk about you want to run the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players. Actually, we're actors who want to be directors who end up being producers. That works a little better in L.A., but you can get the feel for it. It goes into ideas that I had never looked at, even when your motives are good. You can be a producer of confusion rather than harmony. I only wanted the best for you. That's thinking you know better than God. What's best for somebody else just because it was the best for you? Or even when trying to be kind, it talks about. So I'm starting to look at self-will. The connection I would like to refer to again, for those of you that can see it, is that your list of current unmanageability, which are the manifestations of page 52, became your agnosticism in the first part of step 2. One is a reflection of the other. Now, those two lists, which are really one, which are the unmanageability and the agnosticism, will now become where your self-will lies, which will soon become the first column. So watch that the next time you do the work, or if you're in the work, and see if the current manifestations of the unmanageability aren't a reflection of the current manifestations of the current agnosticism, and see if that isn't a reflection of where you're having self-will, and see if that list just puts names on it, you make it into your first column. And if that first list, if the unmanageability is connected to a drink, then your first column will be a drink, not just names. There'll be a drink of booze behind each of those names, whether it's a person, an institution, or a principle. And those lists will become one with alcohol. But now it's asking me to look at my self-will, which comes from my doubt about God, which comes from my unmanageability, which comes from a drink of alcohol. And they give you the next page 61, all of page 62. And then they give you what I think is the greatest statement of hope so far in the big book, in the middle of page 62. And this is a great statement of hope. Some people take this statement, they beat themselves up in the fourth column. And that statement is, my troubles are of my own making. I would say before you start inventory, you should try to see the positive side to that statement. You see, because we're no longer victims, and I got free of a lot of that in the first two steps. And thank God my troubles are of my own making. Because if my troubles now are of anybody else's making, they're going to have to do something for me to get free. Daddy's dead. If my troubles are of my father's making, he's going to have to come back from the grave and forgive me or teach me right. You will never get the love you needed then, now. You got a lot of people in therapy seeking love that they needed when they were a child, now that they're an adult, and you're not going to find it. You're not going to find it. Not what you needed then. You'll find the love you need now. But you'll find that deep down within, and you'll bring that to your relationships. That's what changed for me. I don't think anyone in this room does not know the skills to have a healthy relationship. I do think we suffer from lack of power, and we need some power to bring what we already know to a relationship. But the mistake I always made was I was looking for something, kind of like with meetings. I was looking for something from the relationship to make me whole, and together we'll work this thing out, rather than becoming a whole person who could bring something to a relationship where they're both bringing to it rather than taking from it. Kind of like meetings we were talking earlier. The first time that everyone in this room gets free that meetings aren't what keeps you sober, my mind says, well, then why go to meetings? If meetings don't keep me sober, why should I keep going? Well, maybe I can keep going, but I need to find another motivation. Maybe I can start to go to give rather than get. Oh, I didn't get what I wanted from that meeting. So what? What did you bring to it? Well, she didn't give me what I needed in this relationship. You're looking for a human to give you what God can only give. One of the biggest pieces in my last inventory was that I want humans to be God, and I want God to be a human. And I'm looking for God what I can get from you, and I'm looking for you what I need to get from God. And it was a big piece in my inventory. Why don't these people live up to my expectations? My God, I've got expectations like they should be gods, not human. And I tell you, I've been all over the world, and I've met some enlightened human beings. I've met some awake beings. I've met some spiritual beings. We all have. But you know what the term is they always leave out when they use these terms? Spiritual being, enlightened being, awake being. They always leave out the word human. That's what I don't like. And it was a long time before I had any compassion for myself to just be human. And I think there comes a time on this path, not necessarily at this point, but for every one of us, I think there'll come a time on your path where you're going to have to stop perpetuating violence on yourself by always trying to change that part of yourself that'll always be just human. It's these people that go from one self-help thing to the next, and they're always working on something. When do you come to some sort of love for yourself that's healthy? You know, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. And it's that kind of self-esteem that'll set up a life where you won't be let down by people. But we'll get to that. This describes when I'm not at one. This describes when I'm running my life on my will. And here's the point I would like to make. Why would anybody in this room decide to turn their life run on their will over to God if they still thought their life run on their will could be successful? That's why this requirement comes before the decision. Because no one in this room would want to decide to turn their will and their life over if they still thought their life run on their will could be successful. That's why I wanted to decide to turn my will and my life over, because my life run on my will hasn't worked. So that's where they start, after you're convinced of these ABCs. So you sit with that requirement, and you just sit with it, and you read those pages, and you read those pages, and you read those pages, until you can just say to yourself, I'm convinced. I am absolutely convinced that my life run on my will, sober. They're not talking about just drunk in the ABCs. They're talking about drunk or sober. And I'm convinced that my life run on my will, sober, doesn't work. Even when my motives are good, even when trying to be kind, I'm always after something. And there's a state of consciousness that the first three steps can bring you to that my sponsor talks about being brought to in the Colorado State Penitentiary. And that state of consciousness is this: anything God has in mind for me is better than anything I will or ever will have in mind for me. It's a place of surrender. Whatever God has for me is better than what I have for me. Bill Wilson talks in the 12 and 12, one of the few lines that I do relate to, is that my best can be an enemy of the best that God has for me. Even my very best, at my very best. There's another third step consideration they gave me, which goes like this. Are you willing to live life on terms other than your own? There was another third step consideration that just hammered me, and that was, if you had something to do with your own creation, wouldn't you have done a little better job than God's? That'll bring you to where you play God, right? So we've looked at two parts. We've looked at, am I convinced of the ABCs, and am I convinced of the first requirement? Now, here's some of the misconceptions I've heard to step three and that I've had myself. A lot of people think the third step is turning your will and your life over to the care of God. It's not. It's deciding to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. A lot of people think the third step, then the logical question was, okay, step three is not turning my will and my life over to the care of God. It's just deciding to. So what's the decision? And a lot of people will say the third step decision is the prayer. The third step decision comes way before the prayer. The third step decision is at the bottom of 62. I would also like to refer to, this is where the paragraph starts, this is the how and the why of it. The how and the why of what? The how and the why of deciding to turn your will and your life over. So first they're going to tell you why, and then they're going to tell you how. So why do I need to make this decision? Why? Well, they answer their own question. Because playing God doesn't work. That's why I need to make this decision. Me playing God doesn't work. Me running my life on self-will doesn't work. So that's why. So how do I make this decision? Well, it's pretty simple. It says, we decided, this is the third step decision. We decided that from hereafter in this life, God would be my director, my principal. I would be his agent. He would be my father and I would be his child. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept is the keystone, mark that because we're going to review these stones in a little while, the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we've passed to freedom. So now we have a spiritual structure that consists of a foundation, which is in, some people say it's the first step. The foundation is your first step. That has to be strong. The first stone put on that foundation was at step two. Do you now believe, or are you even willing, your willingness to believe? That's the cornerstone. Now you've put some more stones in place, you're at the top of this arch, and you're going to put the keystone in, which balances the whole thing. And they say here that the keystone is this decision. Then you're going to put some more, and at the 12th step, there'll be a foundation, another foundation stone. So they're saying here that this decision is quite important. It's going to be the balance of this new and triumphant arch, or to my freedom. So there's the decision. So I was told after being convinced of the ABCs, after being convinced of the first requirement that my life run on self-will doesn't work, that now I should take these terms, director, principal, and father, and put next to them their opposites, the actor, the agent, and the child, and ask myself what those terms mean to me. I had some stuff I had to get through to look at God being a father. I didn't like my father. I didn't like my father till he was on his deathbed, and I didn't really gain much respect for him until he was dead. How am I going to work with that? I've been told you can choose one of those that works for you. You can look at all three of them, what they mean together. But what does a director really do? He says, move over here, directs your speech, directs your actions, just like in a movie. What would a principal do? You mean I get to be an agent of God? You mean a big part of me being here today is part of my third step decision? That I made this decision, I would like to be an agent of God. Stand up in an AA meeting sometime and say, I'm here today as an agent of God. It's hard enough to stand up in your home group and say you're a recovered alcoholic. They'll think you mean cured, or that you're crazy, or that that's not a promise. So you look at those conceptions and you make a decision. From hereafter in my life, this is what I would like. I would like to stop being a director and I'd like to just be an actor. I always see the star in the scene. I never see the little guy that's running around in the corner doing all the footwork. The agent. I always see Don Quixote. Or the principal. What does that mean? What would it mean for me to be a child of God? And my sponsor, and he laid this on me the first time in the work, so it wasn't so esoteric. He said that if the idea that I am a child of God could go from my head to my heart one day, I would never have a problem with self-esteem ever again. That if it could go from my head to my heart, that I am a child of God, there would never be anything you would be able to do, accomplish, acquire, or succeed at that would ever do anything more for your for healthy self-esteem than to realize that you're a child of God. You know? And you decide. Then they give you some promises based on the decision. Why did they put the promises before the prayer? And I think it was really tricky that after the prayer, If you look at the end of the third step prayer, why did they put "we thought well" before taking this step, making sure that we were ready? Because they knew who they were writing this book for, and if we thought too much before taking this step, we would talk ourselves out of it. So right after the prayer, they put "we thought well before taking this step." You should look at that before you do the prayer. Have I? Am I really ready? Ready to what? To abandon myself utterly to God. Am I really ready to do that? And my question would be, how are you going to abandon yourself to God? And it was the same answer I got to, then how do I turn my will and my life over if this was but a decision? And the answer was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Acts against the will, contrary to the way you've lived your life. That's how we turn our will and our life over. That's how you're going to decide to abandon yourself utterly. It's steps 4 through 9. And they give you some promises. And my sponsor never used the promises like carrots. Oh, maybe these will happen for you one day, sometimes quickly. People who want to stay sick love to hide behind, sometimes slowly. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. They never claim spiritual progress. They just know they're not perfect. You see, there's a lot of lines in this book that you've heard people use to stay sick. And there's a lot of lines in this book you could use to get well. So what are some of these promises? When we sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things follow. We have a new employer, being all powerful. He'll provide what you need if you keep close to him and perform his work well. I think, to me, that meant he'll give me the power to write inventory if I keep close to him and continue on with this work. The best thing I can do for God at this point is 4 through 9. Not all this stuff out here. I think it's pretty important to have a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps before you carry the message to other alcoholics. That doesn't mean you can't be of service, but I think the term 12-step work has been so perverted that it would be as beneficial to be making coffee as it would to be taking somebody through the 12-step work. 12-step work is work with the 12 steps. As far away from that as we've gotten. Or it can be pitching a new drunk, but that's 12. That's work in the 12 steps. Helping someone see their first step. But I'm the kind of alcoholic that wants to have a spiritual awakening as a result of something I haven't done yet. But I do know that at this point, the first time I took the third step, I started to find a quiet place inside. I was told to practice. To try to see a picture of a place where I'd been at peace sometime in my life, in my mind. And I would always see this Crater Lake in Boulder, Colorado, where I was when I was a hippie. And then I was encouraged to try to see that place other than in my head, deep down within. And I was encouraged to bring my conception of God into that place with me. And at the time it was just light. And I would see myself at this lake with this light. And I would practice sitting there with God. And that began to happen when I took the third step. Established on such a footing, I began to be less and less interested in myself, my little plans and design. And more I became interested in seeing what I can contribute to life. And what I could contribute to life at that time was to move on with 4 through 9. Was to have experience with 4, not just theories about it. Was to write inventory and share about my experience with 1, 2, and 3. You'll begin to feel new power flow in. You'll begin to enjoy peace of mind. As you discover you can face life successfully, you'll become conscious of God's presence. When that starts to happen, you'll lose your fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. You'll be reborn. You see, my sponsor told me that the word restore in step 2 wouldn't work for me. Because I'd never been in a place of sanity to be restored to. He said we would assume I went insane about 3 or 4 seconds after I was born, and that I did not need to be restored to anything. I needed a new mind. I needed a new mind. A lot of people say AA gave them their life back. I never had a life to get back. Some of you had it going on, and that's all you want back is what you already had. I didn't have it going on to get back. I needed a new mind and a new life. I was reborn. I am not the same person that took the third step when I was 6 months sober. I'm not the same person that took the third step a year ago when I started the work this time. It's good to look at the prayer before you say it and really see what it is you're saying here. And then you do it in a meaningful way to you and your sponsor or whoever you're doing it with, however they want you to do it. And it says, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Anybody ever wonder why there's no amen at the end of the third step prayer, but there is at the end of the seventh step prayer? Was it a typo? Was it a mistake? Did he mean to put an amen there, but they didn't? I was told it's not by mistake. And I was told that there's no amen at the end of the third step prayer because everything you do from the third step prayer until the seventh step prayer is all part of the prayer. And that in that prayer I would be safe and protected. And that that prayer would end at the end of the seventh step. And then there's an amen. And it proved to be true because I went into a place I decided to never go into again. And that's where I found God, in the middle of that garbage I thought I was never going to look at again, because I knew I couldn't fix it. It says, next we launch out on a course of vigorous action. This is the first step of action. So, this is where the book is going to shift, and we're no longer just going to make considerations and answer questions. We are not going to go past one direction until we've done it. And I'll show you what I mean by that when we get to the first direction. But it does say here, this is the first step of action, vigorous action, which many of us never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, this third step decision could, remember, they're reminding you again, it was but a decision. It could have little permanent effect unless it once followed by a strenuous effort, and here's what inventory is. Inventory is a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. That's what inventory is. But before that it says our decision was a vital and crucial step, but it could have little permanent effect unless it once followed by a strenuous effort, which leads me to believe if this third step is followed by a strenuous effort, I could have a permanent effect. Because if it tells me what I don't do, I won't have a permanent effect, then if I do this, I will. And I got to tell you, I've never been the same since the day I took the third step the first time. But I have to tell you, I know it's necessary that I follow it with 4 through 9. It's not a place to stop. Liquor is just a symptom. So now we're going to get down to the cause, which we'll find in column 2, and the condition of our alcoholism in column 3. Therefore, you'll start on a personal inventory. And here's why you do the work on a regular basis. Because a business that takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. That's one of the reasons for continued work with 4 through 9. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding, searching, and a fact-facing, fearless process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged and unsaleable goods and to get rid of them promptly without regret. If I'm to be successful, I can't fool myself about values. What is it worth? So we're going into inventory to look for truth. God is truth. If you're finding big chunks of truth, you're finding big chunks of God. We're going to do the exact same thing with our lives. We're going to search out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced, remember, I said I was convinced, that self manifested in various ways is what has defeated me. Now I'm going to consider the common manifestations of self. What are the common manifestations of self? Resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear that I bring into relationships. They start with resentment. This is the number one offender. And from now on, it's also important in each paragraph to know what it is in the paragraph. So let me read it the way I see it. Resentment is the number one offender. Resentment destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Really? Resentment destroys more alcoholics than alcohol. It says, than anything else. From resentment stems all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, body and mind, we have been spiritually sick. There's the three parts to the first step. Mentally, physically, and spiritually. When the spiritual malady, the manifestations of page 52, are overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Which means to me, if I take the spiritual treatment for being shut off to get unblocked from my own spirit, I won't ever get the mental obsession, which means I'll never get the physical craving. But here's where they describe the three-part disease. We're not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institution, or principles with whom we were angry. Stop. Don't go any further. That's the first instruction of action. And you stay on the list until the list is done. And this is where you're making your first call. And I was told you'll know when the list is done when you know the list is done. And you know what? When the list was done, I knew it was done. But I also keep myself open. From the time I start my resentment list, my first column, until the day that I fist step, if another name comes or another entry that belongs in my inventory comes, I put it down and I take it across to where I am. So from the day you start your list until the day you do your fist step, keep it current. More will be revealed. Sometimes you're in the middle of the fourth column and three other names come. Keep it current. It shouldn't just be an inventory from the day you start your list backwards. It should be a list from the day you start your list until you fist step. It's obvious people are people. And I believe what comes is what needs to come. If you say a prayer and you say, God help me face and be rid of the things in myself which are blocking me from you, from others, and from myself. If the name comes, put it down. Don't analyze it. The first column is not the time to analyze it. Don't question it. Just put it down. Institutions are a little more vague. It could be hospitals. It could be IRS. It could be I include groups of people. I think if the name comes, if an entry comes, don't even question what category it is. Just put it down. Groups of people that you've resented. Principles. Principles are values and belief I was either pushed on as a kid that I don't like, or sometimes AA principles. Write inventory on the principle, just don't drink no matter what, and see what comes in the fourth column. Any of this stuff that's been pushed on you that comes when you pray, put it down. Stay on the list. Groups of people. Start with your earliest memory and come forward to today. Start with today and go back. Now, I'll give you a clue for those that have been around for a while. Because a lot of you that have been around for a while, you don't live with deep-seated resentment like you did 10, 15 years ago. You don't live like that. So to work with the word resentment doesn't generate much of a list nowadays. Work with some other words. Who's let me down? Look through your address book. See where you feel tension. Who am I jealous of? Who am I discouraged with? Who have I been betrayed by? You'll find this, the more subtle forms of self in there. But all you're really trying to do is to say a prayer and go with what comes that's in your consciousness. But don't think it has to be a huge resentment that you're holding on to make a list now after being around for many years. I look at the people I sponsor. I look at page 52. I look at what I don't like about myself and others. Because of what we're leading up to here, I would say do not put yourself or God on this first list. Not yet. So when you know the list is done, you know the list is done, you come to the next instruction. We asked ourselves why we were angry. Let down, jealous, disturbed. And that's where you do column two. Now, if I have a name, and I'm still working with blank pieces of paper. I'm not working with a notebook yet. And all I have so far is a list. All I have so far is my first column. I take the first name off my list, I put it on a piece of paper, and I let the second columns come. A, B, C, she did this, this, didn't do that, didn't do that. Now I just do that until I'm done with every name. But I'm not still working with my notebook yet. I'm just putting the person's name and the resentments or whatever comes for the second column. Now let's say I do that on everybody and I've followed that instruction. I've asked myself, why am I angry? I take the first name and I take the first resentment. For example, if I got Charlie and I got 10 resentments toward Charlie, I'm going to use 10 pieces of paper. Paper's not expensive. You don't have to cram 10 resentments on one page so your ego wins and you don't ever see anything because you got 10 set third columns crammed in there. You're trying to fit the fourth column in there. If you got 5 resentments toward the guy, use 5 pieces of paper. So I've done this first 2 columns on these pages over here. I've got my first 2 columns done. And I take a name off my list and the first resentment, and I like to number them and letter them. So, for example, the first name off my list, I would number it. Let's say his name's Charlie. And I got 5 resentments toward Charlie, so I'm going to do 1A. And then I'm going to do the second one on another page, and the third one on another page, and a fourth one on another page, 1 page per second column. Bill gives you a few examples here. But what he found here was that in most cases, after he listed why he was angry, in most cases, we're going to look at 7 areas. So let's say I've got number 1 from my list, and his name is Charlie, and A was, didn't pay me back. I'm going to look for 7 areas of self. It's a little confusing because they repeat themselves in these next 2 paragraphs, but the first one is that we will find that our self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, sex relations were either hurt or threatened. So I was angry. I was burned up. On this list, we said opposite each name our injuries. Was it self-esteem? We already have. Security, they're giving me a new one. Ambition I already have, personal relations I already have, sex relations I already have, and then all the way at the bottom he uses another one, number 7, which is pride. So I find there's 7 words here they're going to work with in the third column. So I say to myself very simply, when I resented, and you might have something where you put the name down but you come to it now and you go to write the second column, but you don't feel that way anymore, but you got to go back to when he didn't pay you back, when you were angry. You're looking at what's stuck in there from when you were angry. So I asked myself, when I resented Charlie for not paying me back, did it affect my self-esteem? Yes. Pocketbook? Yes. Ambition? Yes. Personal relations? Yes. Sex relations? Could have. Because if I would have had that money from Charlie, I could have looked better with this girl over here. Sometimes it's not always pocketbook and it's not always sex. Security, definitely. Pride, absolutely. He gives you a couple choices of how to do this. With Mr. Brown, he has 3 resentments and 3 third columns. One was attention to my wife, told my wife about my mistress, might get my job at the office, and he uses the third column next to each one of them. In the next example with Mrs. Jones, he puts a bunch of resentments in one paragraph. And in the third one, with the employer, he does the same thing. With the fourth one, he puts 3 in one pile too. I like to do it the way he does with Mr. Brown, and I like to take 1 resentment at a time. I'm going to do a page for paying attention to my wife, a page for telling my wife about my mistress, and a page for might get my job at the office. So I would letter those A, B, and C. So the last paragraph on that page says, we went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. This is the line where the people started to ask, what do they mean by that? When we were finished with the first three columns, we considered it carefully. They knew that the fourth column instructions were a page and a half away. They're not talking about the fourth column here. That's on page 67, where I'm going to look at my part. And they said, well, what is it they want us to consider carefully after we've done what Bill's done here in the example? How much more clear can you be then that was Charlie who you were mad at? Sometimes the second column does need to be a little more clear because some of us want to put big explanations. The second column doesn't need to be when I was walking down the street on August 17th, 1994, he came up to me and... No. It's just he came up and punched me in the face. So, I'm saying that the second column does need to be clear, but how much more clear can you be when you've considered it carefully? So these people in Denver, and keep in mind the book says more will be revealed and that God will constantly disclose more to you and to us, and he has, with people that have been writing inventory 5-10 times longer than anybody had when this book was written. You should always keep that in mind. Nobody had more than 5 years when they wrote the first 164 pages. So don't sell yourself short, and don't think you can't be in a recovered state in your first 5 years, because these people claim to be, when they did what was necessary to recover. But these people in Denver that have been writing inventory for a long, long time started to ask themselves, and I would like to shift to a different resentment, and I would like to shift to one that we've all had, and I would like to shift to one, let's say I went to my list over here and I took her name, we'll call her Sally, and I've numbered it, let's say like it's number 4 on my from my list, I put number 4, Sally, let's say I've got 10 resentments towards Sally, I'm going to use 10 pages, but the first one is that she left me. So I would put, I would number the resentment, I would letter the second column, and the second column would say, she left me. I write a prayer at the top of the page, help me see the truth. And I ask myself, when Sally left me, did it hurt, threaten, or interfere with my self-esteem? Yes. Ambition? Yes. Security? Yes. Personal relations? Yes. Sex relations? Yes. Pocketbook? Yes. Pride, I'm going to put up here under ambition. Pride? Yes. So I found that when I resented Sally for leaving me, it affected all 7 areas of my life. Self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relations, sex relations, and pocketbook. So these people in Denver started to ask themselves, why did it affect my self-esteem? What is my self-esteem? I didn't know the difference between self-esteem and pride. Self-esteem is how I see or feel about me. Pride is how you see or feel about me. Pride always comes from the outside. Ambition is what I want. Security is what I need. Personal relations are my belief systems about friends. Sex relations are about people you're having sex with or where sex is involved. Some people say just the opposite sex. Nowadays, that's not always true. Pocketbook is my money or whatever price you might not have been willing to pay that you can see. It's not always money. So here's what I would start to put. I resented Sally for leaving me. It affected my self-esteem. Why? And my nature, my ego wants to convince me that when Sally left, it affected my self-esteem because I'm no good. I don't deserve her. If that was really true, why did I get mad? Do you really think somebody with low self-esteem, true low self-esteem, would hold on to a resentment for somebody leaving them for this long? Or would somebody with real low self-esteem just sit there and say, well, I didn't deserve you anyway, and sit there like a lump? That's not what I did. My self-esteem was affected because of a belief system I've never seen in my life. And what comes off the end of my pen is that when I resented Sally for leaving me, it affected my self-esteem because I am above anybody leaving me. And you look for the dominant role on the committee in that relationship. And this is where you'll start to see what we call in AA the committee. And that with each of these one-act plays, there was a head of the committee that was telling you stuff that's not true. And in this one act play, when Sally left me, I would have to say to you that the dominant personality on the committee that day was the perfect boyfriend. And once you see the dominant role, all you have to do is say, what does the perfect boyfriend think he is? He thinks he's above anybody leaving him. Self-esteem. Pride, other spectators. Nobody should see me who? The perfect boyfriend being left by anybody. Security, this is always life and death for the perfect boyfriend. His life is at stake. Security, I need her to stay no matter what I do. I need her to exist. I need her to be whole. And you start to see the lies. Please don't think we're discovering the truth in the third column. We're discovering that the lies in the third column that my ego is trying to tell me are true. Personal relations, friends don't leave friends. Friends are loyal. It's not true. Sex relations. Women don't leave men. Men leave women. No real man gets left. You'll see these beliefs about what you think real men are and what women are. Pocketbook. No one leaving me should affect my money. And I'm going to put something there that I see. I also wasn't willing to pay the price to see why she left. And you know what I'm going to do in the next column? I'm going to look at what I did to pay that price. Now, if you're doing a big inventory for the first time, I would say just be happy to put the 7 words. If you don't understand the third column, fine. If you've been around for a while and you want to see an interesting dynamic that takes place when you're not at one, remember, this is a time when I wasn't at one. I'm mad at her for leaving me. If you can see the third column, start to write it. But I'll tell you this. If you find yourself writing low self-esteem, you better really start to look at it, because it ain't low self-esteem. You might feel like you're unworthy. You might feel like a piece of you-know-what, but it's because of a whole nother belief system that sets you up to feel that way that you could never live up to even if you were God. It's because of high self-esteem that we feel low self-esteem. They make it sound like low self-esteem is the problem. Low self-esteem is the result of the problem. The problem is, in this situation, I got a little too much self-esteem. Finally read it the other day. They were using it in the paper. And the article was, children starting to feel the effects of high self-esteem. And I thought, wow. And I read it, and they read about these families in L.A. that tell the child, we are a perfect child of the universe, perfect in every way. And they go to school one day and somebody tells them something that doesn't jive with that they're told by mom and dad. And they go back into school and they blow everybody away. Because no one's ever said anything like that to them, you know? The results of high self-esteem are in my inventory. If you can see that, you can see that. If you can't, you can't. But I do know that anybody in their first inventory, or however many inventories you've done, if you've been thorough up to this point, you will be able to begin to see the fourth column. So what I do is I turn the page, and now I'm going to start to write on the back. And I'm going to put 4 headings taking up the whole page. Selfish, self-seeking, leave space, dishonest, and afraid. Because here's what it says. Tells you about resentment. Have you realized this? Is it fatal? Do you really believe that? Do you believe alcohol is involved in resentment? When you harbor resentment, you're shut off from the sunlight of the spirit, the insanity return, and you will drink again. Are you convinced of that? And for you to drink is to die. They're bringing you back to the first step in the fourth step. But now we're going to turn back to what we've written to look for the key to the future. That sounds pretty important to me, that in the next part of this inventory, you're going to find a key for your future. And you're going to be prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. You've begun to see that the world and its people dominated you. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, column 2, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How can you escape? You see these resentments must be mastered, but how? You can't wish away resentment any more than you can alcohol. You're as powerless over your resentments as you are over booze. But yet they'll give you a pamphlet on how to manage anger. You can't. You can't manage it any more than booze. So there's a prayer. One of my friends calls it a bridge prayer, the bridge between the third and fourth column. Realize these people are perhaps spiritually sick, like yourself. I've seen people get lost in that prayer. This is a sick person down here, and here I am up here. It reminds me here, though we don't like their symptoms, column two, and the way it disturbs us, column three. They, like ourselves, are sick too. Ah, they, like ourselves, are sick too. We ask God to help show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offends, we say to ourselves, this is a sick man like myself. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will, not mine, be done. We avoid retaliation and argument. You wouldn't treat a sick person that way. You destroy your chance of being helpful. You can't be helpful to all people, but God will show you how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Now the instructions. I look back at what I've written. Put out of your mind what they did. Look for your own mistakes. And you're supposed to look where you had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid. Though a situation is not entirely your fault, you try to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were you to blame? The inventory is yours, not the other man's. And here's where it says, some people will say it doesn't say to write the fourth column in the big book because it's not in the example Bill gave us. It says here, when we see our faults, we list them. We place them before us in black and white. That's pretty clear that you're supposed to write it down. Admit your wrongs honestly, become willing to set these matters straight. So I start to write the truth on the back that I can't get to. I bet everyone in this room that's written inventory has had times where something comes off the end of your pen that didn't come from here. It came from somewhere else. My first big resentment in my first inventory was my dad was 70 years old by the time I was 10. Self-esteem, affected my pride, ambition, security, personal relations, sex relations. And then I started to write, where was I selfish? And off the end of my pen came, I was so selfish. I knew better than God how he should have been, how old he should have been, and how he should have done it. Better than God Almighty. Better than the way God had it. I knew better. That's playing God before I ever took a drink. And I didn't come up with that from here. And I didn't come up with that from therapy. And stuff was coming off the end of my pen I never thought before. Where was I selfish? I only wanted this. I only wanted to be like this. I only cared about this. I only cared about how his age made me look. Self-seeking. I was only after perfect. I only cared about this. I only wanted this. What's the difference between selfish and self-seeking? It doesn't really matter, but a great example is if I'm the one with the cocaine and you ain't getting none from me, I'm being selfish. If you're the one with the cocaine and I'm going to do anything I can to get some, that's self-seeking. Self-seeking is what I'm after. Selfish is what I want to hold on to. Dishonesty, we look at three types. Everyone in here knows what an outright lie. That's one kind of dishonesty. I told him this. I told him this. I lied about this. I lied about this. What about the other kind of dishonesty? Which is more dishonesty, lying to your wife that you're not cheating on her or not saying anything? They're both just as dishonest. So we look at lies of commission. We look at lies of omission, and we look at the biggest lie in the third column, which is lies of self-delusion. So look for lies you told, look for truth you didn't tell, and look for the biggest lie in the third column that you fooled yourself with. I needed him to be okay. I needed him to be younger to exist. I needed her to stay to be okay. Three kinds of dishonesty. And then you'll find under afraid that you're not really even resentful. So it takes what you think the first three columns are about. I was resentful at Sally for leaving me. And you're going to find out it wasn't even resentment you were feeling. And that under every resentment you've ever had is really fear. And that when you're angry, you're really afraid underneath. And that underneath every resentment is fear driving it. I was afraid of looking bad. I was afraid that he would die. I was afraid of how it made me look. I was afraid of pain, rejection. Just list them, no explanation. You're going to correlate those and put them in another inventory. And we'll take a 10 minute or so break and come back and talk about the other two inventories, fear and sex. Thanks.